The in-dash OLED display in the Cadillac Escalade has 38 total diagonal inches of color display. So why do we give it a curve too? I guess you could say, we like to bend the rules. The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of May 28th. I'm your host, William Liu, and I'm joined on the program by Vivek Jacob. Anybody who is still listening to Raptors Podcast at this point, shout out to you. You guys are really diehard fans because nobody wants to hear nothing. No one wants to read anything. No one wants to think about the depressing-ass Toronto Raptors. But Vivek, thank you for doing this. And I don't know, man. How have you enjoyed the NBA playoffs so far?
Outside of the Raptors. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. Like, LeBron, every game you get to watch him play is a treat. Because I feel like during the regular season, you're sort of building up just because you know he's not, you know, going all out and he's saving himself, you know, for these big games. And now this is what you want to see, right? Like, him at his very peak, doing everything he can. And now to be in an eighth straight NBA Finals. To pull it out from 3-2 down, he's ridiculous. And then, you know, I gotta give the Houston Rockets a ton of credit because I didn't think that they could be this effective against the Warriors. Their switching defense has been ridiculously effective at sort of goading them into going into ISO mode. And
shout out PJ Tucker.
Yeah, man. Shout out PJ Tucker doing his thing. Happy for him. Mm. Clearly it looks like he made the right choice.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so obviously the whole CP injury sucks, but either way, like all six games, you know, I mean, I guess the last three games have been really great to watch, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, yo, the fact that there's intrigue in the playoffs, like the fact that we might get Cavs and Warriors, which people are complaining about, which I don't quite understand, like, I don't think it's not interesting. I think it's really interesting that a team, like, gets to play each other 4 years in a row. Like, this is, like, a documented legacy, right? Like, when people think about, like, the NBA golden years, it's, like, MJ, and it's, like, okay, MJ played a whole bunch of different teams. But, like, before that, it was, like, Bird and Magic. And, like, yo, how many times have we seen, like, Sixers-Celtics or Celtics-Lakers? You know what I mean? Like, this is the stuff that really, really sells. And the fact that, like, we're getting like this circuitous route towards this like outcome that we pretty much could have predicted from like the beginning of the season. And obviously the Warriors still have to win the game, and we'll see what happens in game 7. They've kind of struggled a little bit in Houston, but yeah, I mean, it's been really fun to watch the playoffs. I think one thing that really stands out about the playoffs, like just beyond like the X's and O's and stuff, is like, I mean, we've sort of move towards this trend over the last couple of years, but like the teams that are most successful are the ones that have the most wings that can defend and maybe shoot a three. But it's not even like the 3-point shot is not even that important anymore. It's just like if you can switch on defense, you can neutralize so much of what modern offense became to be, which is, a pick and roll basketball. Pick and roll basketball is designed to attack a mismatch, but if you can switch and deny that mismatch, then the pick and roll doesn't lead anywhere. And so it's like really put a priority on, you know, can you switch with all these wings? And also, once you are switched as an offensive player, can you actually attack a switch in the post or in isolation? And then like it's kind of fun to see basketball moving this way, but also it's also kind of like when I watch the Rockets, I never really find them to be like fun to watch just because, I don't know, they just play such a simplistic game, but it kind of works. You know what I mean? I can't believe they're almost about to be the Warriors. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. And, you know, I think one of the fascinating things for me from that series has just been how exposed, you know, one-dimensional guys can be, even if that one skill they have is, you know, pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Emba Mute, like, he can't get on the floor right now because as well as he defends, like, he's not making shots. He's not giving you anything offensively, so he kind of kills their spacing. And then on the other side, you've got guys like, you know, Nick Young struggling to keep up. And,
right.
You know, so I find that part of it fascinating. And I would, you know, I guess comparing those guys, in some ways, you could say the defense is still more valuable.
Sure.
Just because of the offensive talent around them, right?
Yeah.
You can sort of get by. And I guess this sort of ties into the whole DeRozan conversation where, you know, when he's not giving you that much offensively, mm-hmm. he needs that defensive base where it's like, okay, at least he's giving you something on that end.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing with the Raptors that, you know, it starts with DeRozan really, but it kind of goes across the board. It's just like the Raptors.
It trickles down for sure.
Yeah. The Raptors have just not had enough of these like two-way guys, right? Like you look at the playoffs, mm-hmm. like how many centers are still playing in the, like an actual role in the final four, just the final four teams, right? You got Baines, who is like a banger, but he can at least defend and he can rebound.
Right.
It's the same thing with Tristan Thompson. Those two are the only real centers left in the series. Like,
And how much would Baines play if you know they had won and gone on to face Houston or Golden State?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much, man. But the thing, at least with Baines, is that he can like he can hang a little bit on switches. Like when you see Baines switch on to LeBron,
and he's starting to hit the three.
Oh yeah, well, I mean yeah, we'll see about that one. That's a JV three. But like yeah, I mean like it's the same thing, right? It's like these guys they have to be able to defend first and foremost, right? And like you look on. The Cavs are playing one center. They're kind of playing Larry Nance a little bit, but that's because the rotation is really short. And I guess Kevin Love is a center, but he can stretch the floor, so that's different. And he's really a power forward. Functionally, he's a power forward. And then if you look on like the West series, like there's no centers at all. Like this Capella doesn't even play much anymore. I thought Capella would be a big factor in the series if he could be effective, but they're way better with PJ Tucker as center. PJ mm-hmm. Tucker is like an inch taller than me. Like that's not an NBA center, man. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, and then if you look at the Raptors, like, so much of the Raptors' success in the regular season was, like, playing through the center. It's like, Poeltl was great. JV was great. Serge was functional. But then, you know, in the playoffs, like, a lot of those guys couldn't even play. And then you look at the Raptors in terms of how many wings they had. You know, they were all kind of like, OG was a two-way wing. But then you got like CJ Miles and DeRozan were purely offensive wings that gave it all back defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Raptors had a bunch of point guards. Like that's just not enough, right? And we see even point guards getting exposed. Look at Rozier and Steph Curry to a lesser extent.
Yeah, and I mean that's part of why we all got so enamored with Norman Powell, right? And the potential that mm-hmm. he offered, and that's why Masai gave him the contract that he did.
Yeah,
and obviously we all hope that it's just. You know, a blip in the radar and, you know, he'll get back to the guy he was in the last couple of years.
Once he drops GoDaddy, we're good.
Yeah, for sure. The Raptors just got to drop GoDaddy as a whole.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. No, we got to go for another, you know, just go for Squarespace or something, man. Just something else, man. I don't even know if they're the same one. I don't think they offer the same. Whatever. Anyway, keep going.
So that's the thing. Like you started with the value of the two-way player now and the triple threat, right? Being able to pass, shoot, and, dribble. Mm-hmm. So, those are things where, like, you can't technically just be a guy that stands in the corner anymore. Like even Ariza's being challenged to put the ball on the floor and he's had some drives where he's got to the bucket, you know. That's why you see how much the Warriors miss a guy like Iguodala. That's mm-hmm. why you see, you know, the Cavs, why they're being pushed to seven games is because LeBron has to do so much to just get shots, create shots for guys like J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver. And, mm-hmm. So that value in just having a guy that can dribble, create for others, and it's this constant having to create for each other, right? And the Cavs lack that big time. You're seeing the Rockets and the Warriors sort of force each other to go ISO because, you know, saying, hey, we can switch on to anyone. So, and that's the other cool part, you know. Initially, you know, you look at a guy like Harden. They've been putting him on Clay a lot of the time. And initially you're thinking, oh, Harden can't chase him around screens, but guess what? He's switching off the first screen anyway, so.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a pretty basic responsibility for him.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's just kind of crazy to me, man. Like, none of these centers really matter anymore. And I think that's, you know, like, when I watch these games, like, I don't really feel as angry about it anymore because I'm a little bit, over the fact that the Raptors lost. I mean, we could talk about it in a second, but, yeah, it's just like, I'm just looking to see, like, what, you know, the Raptors could take away from this and like sort of which directions the Raptors should pivot into. And when you think about it, the Raptors started a lot of games in the playoffs with JV and Ibaka. And you're just there was no way that was going to go anywhere, man. Just look at the game that it's being played today. It just doesn't work like that anymore. Like a guy like Marcus Morris, he would have been like the second most valuable player in the Raptors series if the Raptors had Marcus Morris against like the Cavaliers. And like Marcus Morris comes off the bench for the Celtics, right? So, it's a little bit tough to watch from that perspective, but I mean, you know, these are kind of the lessons you learn, and that's where it really does show the Raptors lacking a couple of things in terms of the roster. But
That's so much of a matchup thing, right? Like,
bad matchups, man. We can maybe defend like if like the opponent does what they do on a nightly basis, but as soon as they decide to attack a mismatch, the Raptors have way too many points of weaknesses.
Yeah, for sure. And like another thing I look to is I don't know if you saw the stats for Al Horford in the Celtics Cavs series.
Please slander
with Tristan Thompson. Okay. And so on court, I'll start with the off court. So when Tristan Thompson was off the court, per 36, Horford was averaging 25 and 9 assists as well. And then with Tristan on the court, his numbers dropped to like 9 and 8 for 36. Mm. It was crazy. And that's the thing. It's such a matchup thing where, okay, Tristan Thompson looks great defending Horford, but now you go into the next series and can you even play Tristan Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
Who's he going to guard?
I think it depends. I think so much of it also comes down to, I think, the star players and whether or not they can dictate tempo. And like LeBron's so good at doing that like
he does that better than anyone.
Exactly, right? Like look at the Celtics game. Like he just like completely killed any tempo in that game. Like I was watching it like on replay. When I was watching a replay, I was like, oh wow, this is a slow tempo game. Like you can like on League Pass, there's like a fast forward 10 seconds function. Anytime the Cavs inbound the ball, I just click fast forward 10 seconds and they're like barely in the front court. If you can control tempo and still get a good shot and then set your defense going the other way, then I feel like Tristan Thompson is more like playable, but it's tough, man. It's, you can really only succeed with Tristan because LeBron's there.
Yep.
Right? Like, you could succeed with anybody really with LeBron there. I'm sure if you put Serge Ibaka in the game, it would have been fine, but,
okay, so I found those numbers. So I can give you the right numbers now.
Oh yeah, please slander.
Al Horford with Tristan Thompson off the court, 76 minutes. Per 36, 25.1 points, 9 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 67% shooting from the field, 44% from three. Celtics were plus 23.8 net rating. Wow. Tristan Thompson on the court, 173 minutes, 8.7 points per 36, 7.1 rebounds, 3 assists, 33% from the field, 22% from three. Celtics were minus 6.
Man. It's honestly so inexplicable that Al Horford just continues to lose to Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson is good against like two teams in the NBA. And it's whatever Al Horford's playing on and then like kind of the Warriors. Not really. Although he had a good series in 2016.
Yeah, he was a big part of that. But I mean, again, we tried to transfer that over to the Raptors and do they need to look at the 82 games as a way to address their roster issues in a way that can be beneficial in the playoffs.
Right.
So
they have to be. That has to be the directive. And I think it was the directive last year too.
Yeah. No, I mean, that, for sure. That's part of why they changed playing style and everything. But, you know, how conducive to elite success is a JV and Ibaka front court, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a serious question that they have to ask among others. You know, because in reality, you probably played the season with four centers, with JV, Ibaka, Poeltl, and Bebe. And then, you know.
Bebe played in that series. Woo! Dwayne.
Oh, man, those 2 minutes.
Yo, those some of the most disastrous 2 minutes I've ever seen out of anybody, man.
Oh, man, that was bad. Realistically, you really only have one true power forward on the roster in Pascal Siakam.
Yeah. And that's a problem. That's a problem.
Yeah.
One person that could solve that problem is the next head coach of the Raptors. I mean, I think that's The coaching search, I mean, it just continues. I think more and more when you look at the series, like, I don't know. I've said enough about Dwayne Casey. I don't know if you want to say anything else about Dwayne. I mean, I called you, like, right after.
Yeah, we did the react.
We already did that thing about Dwayne, so, like, let's leave Dwayne in the past, but,
yeah.
The next guy, I mean, look, the internal candidates, there's, Nick, there's Rex, T-Rex Kalamian, and Stack, and apparently out of the Raptors' internal candidates, the reports are uniform across the board that, Nurse is the favorite internally. But then they also interviewed Bud. Bud went to the Bucks after the Raptors didn't make a formal offer. And then the Raptors, you know, this weekend interviewed, or not this weekend, on Thursday and Friday, they interviewed Udoka and Messina from the San Antonio Spurs. Both seasoned coaches. Obviously, Messina is, like, more seasoned than Udoka, but both of them have been with the Spurs program for a while now. And, you know, they're, you know, top assistant type of guys. So, do you know much about these two? And, you know, between the two, do you have a preference or, I don't know, just generally, what do you think about these two guys?
So obviously, I don't know much about Udoka. I don't think there's been much information to take in.
I got a story.
In general. So. Yo, do you? All right. Let's start with the story then.
Okay. All right. So this, like, I just, like, found it, like, someone on Reddit and also Real GM, because I've been trawling those places a little bit just to find, trying to find content.
Yeah.
And, yeah, someone linked this Hoops Hype blog post from 2007 from a guy named Gabe, Munuike. Like, I butchered that name, but basically he's, like, he was on the Nigerian national team.
Okay.
All right. And so was, Ime Udoka. Udoka, I think he was born in the States, but he's apparently very Nigerian. This gay person wrote a blog post about their time together at AfroBasket, which is like the it's the basketball tournament in Africa. So yeah, I mean it's a very detailed thing. They're talking about how, like, oh, they thought Ime was really American, but he showed up and he was eating the fufu, and it was like, oh yeah, he's like, you know, he's a real Nigerian, everything like that. But apparently there was a fight that broke out between the Nigerian team and the Algerian team. And I'm gonna quote some segments from this, okay? So, the next thing you know, there were three Algerian players on him. Everyone was engaged in combat to save me, if you can believe it. And lo and behold, Ime, he was taking people out like in Mortal Kombat. Finish him. Incredible.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so later in the post, he goes on to say, Ime caught the guy midair with a fist and calmly continued dispatching of oncoming people. He and other guys, yes, me too, were whooping so many people that the crowd started backing up. True to the letter, but Ime had the most notches by far. And then he goes on to say that the Algerian fans were really racist to them after the game.
Oh my god.
Which, you know, yeah, that's unfortunate, but I think not that uncommon in these places. But I mean, yeah, seriously, apparently Ime Udoka is a total badass. Also, he's like, you know, a very qualified coach and stuff.
Can we just get Jerry Stackhouse and Ime Udoka in a ring?
Ooh.
To, like, fight for the job?
I like that. I like that.
I would pay for that.
You know what, though? Let's get Ime, and then whoever loses has to be lead assistant. And then, you know, that will fix the toughness problem of this team. Right? There's another issue the Raptors. They have no toughness. All right? Bam. You got Ime Udoka and Jerry Stackhouse. All right? If you don't get back on defense, Serge Ibaka, you're getting your ass whooped. You're getting the Mortal Kombat treatment from Ime Udoka.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's what I know about Ime. Yeah.
All right, I know one more thing about Ime Udoka.
It's a big factor. I'm not gonna lie, it's really swaying me.
Yeah, I'm reading up on his wiki page now. Mm. In November 2011, Udoka's girlfriend Nia Long gave birth to his first child, Kez Sunday Udoka. I didn't know Nia Long was his girl.
Yo, that's what I'm saying. Yo, he's a very, very attractive dude as well. We're gonna have the most best looking organization in the NBA for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Stackhouse got those sharp ass suits, so.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Messina's
no more international clothiers, Casey, man. Sorry, Case.
Love you, Dad.
Yeah. But you dress like a dad, though.
Yeah, Messina, though, I mean, his resume is obviously extremely impressive.
Right.
You know, he's won the EuroLeague 4 times. He's won a bunch of other trophies as well. And then you look at being with the Spurs organization the last 4 years, I believe. And then, you know, I was pretty impressed just listening to him after these Spurs Warriors games. And just like, he seems like a smart guy, thinks the game well, calm, and you know, he seems to have that presence about him that he's confident in himself.
Right.
And which is something important. I honestly feel like the Raptors just need, this is a moment in which they just need some swagger.
Definitely.
More than anything.
Yeah.
And I definitely see that side of Messina. Mm-hmm. In terms of who has the most swag, your story obviously puts Udoka up there, but I don't know if anyone has more swag than Stackhouse.
In the world, yeah. We're not just talking about coaching candidates for the Raptors. We're just talking about generally.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that man.
Yo,
he
beat up Kirk Snyder, and then the guy later came up to him and said, I needed that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. How could you beat someone up and later they're like, you know what, thank you. I deserve to get my ass whooped. That's
it. Oh, man. So there was a G League game where Stackhouse was meeting with a bunch of kids after, and he was having like a Q&A session with these school kids.
Nice.
And one of the kids raises their hand and asks, what position did you play in the NBA?
Mm.
And straight away, like, deadpan just looks at the kid. My position was scoring machine.
Mm. Damn.
I'm just dying right there.
No, Stackhouse put up 30, man.
Yeah.
30 a game. It wasn't efficient. Jerry Stackhouse was not always efficient, but that man could score, though.
He's going to shoot those shots, unlike Patrick Patterson.
Oh, man. Yeah, Jerry Stackhouse, dude. 80 games, 29.8 points per game. Led the NBA in points that season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say who the Raptors will hire. Oh man, damn. That one season alone, Jerry Stackhouse had more points than Udoka had for his whole career. And Udoka played like 7 years. Wow. Man. I mean, I don't think that's the deciding factor there.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
But no, we're just having fun here, man.
That's all we gotta have.
So.
Yo, speaking of which. I think one thing, I was listening to the Talking Raptors podcast, which by the way, you gotta listen to that thing. I mean, it's, you never know when it's gonna come up, but when you see it in your podcatcher, like that's gotta be the number one thing you listen to.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Did you hear this last episode?
No, I haven't listened to the last one yet.
Okay. So this last episode, Nick and Barry returned to the podcast very forlorn. I don't think they had recorded a podcast since the playoffs.
I had it downloaded. The title was like, it was almost like, does life even matter anymore?
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing, I could really like, I could vibe with that, right? Cause like, I talked to them before the playoffs, and they were all getting on me, they were like, yo, come on man, the Raptors are gonna take them. Oh, it's the playoffs, the episode's called Talking Raptors, Mr. Regular Season, oh man. DeMar DeRozan, 1 second team All-NBA. I mean, all that really needs to be said is DeMar DeRozan is on Mr. Regular Season. Yep. And, you know, he deserved that second team All-NBA. He really deserved third team. He only got second because Steph got hurt and he only beat Steph by like a vote, but it doesn't matter. Second team, that's all history remember. No one's going to remember years from now that DeRozan made it like one vote ahead of Steph. But, yeah, in the Talking Raptors podcast, they were distraught. They were distraught and they were angry and, you know, I think they were saying how it's hard to watch basketball. You can't even wear Raptors gear. Like, they're you know, comedians, so they go all over the place. And it's like, you know, usually, if Barry and Nick, like, are traveling, you know, they'll put on the Raptors hat. They'll represent, you know, they're proud fans. But, like, right now, you got to put on, like, a Jays cap or, like, you know, maybe just no hat at all.
I don't know
like,
if you can put on a Jays cap either.
Yeah, I know. Jays is the... Yo, I'm not even watching. I can't, man. There's been a lot of L's this weekend. Liverpool took a massive L in the Champions League final. It hurts my heart. But, yeah, I mean, what do we do from here? Like, this is a piece I've been working on and I've just been thinking about it. Like, but like, how can Raptors fans and just move on and like come back to following basketball without being angry? Like, what's the next step for people? Because like, you know, we're going to come back eventually, right? But like,
yeah,
how can we be okay with that?
I think at some point we have to arrive at acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And just acknowledge that the Raptors arguably blew it in the biggest window that they'll have. Like, this, just based on how the Pacers series went, the mm-hmm. Celtics series went, the way the Raptors performed during the regular season, the strides they made during the Washington series. Right. For sure, they absolutely blew it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, I think this gives them an opportunity to really look in the mirror and say what needs to be fixed, you know? So right. They've started with the coach. Now they've, you know, I'm sure Masai is taking a deep look at DeRozan. You have to look at the core, right? So Lowry,
you have to.
DeRozan, Ibaka, Valanciunas, and then go from there. So, I think that's the positive. The fact that the Raptors have been sort of pushed into this corner where they have to look inward and they have to sort of take the hard truths, right? And I kind of wrote about this, and it's like the time for all that regular season success, you know, no one cares. The one seed has been done. You've won the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
All, you know, Lowry and DeMar have made their all-star appearances. They're all NBA teams.
Mm-hmm.
All that is out of the way. The only thing that matters now is playoff success.
Right.
So they took a step in a positive direction with changing the offense and addressing that.
Mm-hmm.
And now this offseason, it's about taking that next step and moving closer to that now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the tough thing though is like, I think a lot of people are still a little bit hung up, right? And, I don't want to play armchair psychologist. I think I don't have the education for that, but you know, that, five stages of grief. I mean, I think the Raptors fans are feeling a lot of grief right now, a lot of embarrassment. I think we're past the point of denial, the Sean Woodley phase of like, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. If we had Terrence Ross, we would have won this series. Like, we're past that point. I think we're like firmly stuck on anger right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think soon we'll get to that point where bargaining is just like, well, it's not so bad. Like LeBron, like, you know, he's ended up winning the East anyway. But then like, it's also hard to do that and have any sort of honesty about it because like, you know,
right.
Look, the Celtics took three games off of them and put them on the brink. The Pacers put them on the brink.
That's the thing. Both those teams took them to the final minutes of Game 7.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, the very, very final moments. And they forced LeBron to put in like a superhuman performance. And I don't mean superhuman like when LeBron is like just for fun taking these crazy fadeaways and making them. I mean like really put to the brink, like, yo, if LeBron doesn't make this basket, he might like lose before the finals. Which by the way has not happened. LeBron has been in the finals every single year of my life, like since I was in high school. Like I was in high school when LeBron didn't make the finals. Right? And that's just insane, bro. Like it's just there's like a stat out there that like 74% of the NBA wasn't even 78% of NBA players weren't even in the league when LeBron last, you know, failed to make the finals. That's
right.
That's, you know, that's kind of insane. But you can't even like really bargain about like where the Raptors can go, right? And so, because like you just have to really take the loss on the chin, and you have to be honest about it, and you know, you have to be, you have to get to the point where it doesn't necessarily hurt you anymore. That like, I'm gonna be on Twitter.com and I'm gonna read my NBA content, and occasionally I'm gonna catch random strays for no reason, like no reason. Mm-hmm. Someone's gonna mention Kyle Lowry having 4 points. No reason someone's gonna mention DeMar DeRozan had his three worst plus minus games of the season in the in the Cavs series. You just have to kind of take it on the chin and move on and just sort of internalize that and say, you know what, it's okay. And I no longer sort of am running away from this. And I don't know. I think that's pretty much where you have to go. But I think the tough part for the front office, though, and I guess for fans as well, I mean, for fans, the consequences aren't as high as the front office because you can always be a fan. You don't lose that fandom, but you could lose your job as a front office guy. The tough part is you can't just like throw away these pieces for nothing either. And I think as much as people want to rebuild and, you know, talk about these crazy DeRozan trades of like Chandler Parsons and a number four pick or whatever, like, you can't just throw these guys away for nothing. Because like, there is still value, right? Your goal as a GM is not necessarily to, you know, take the biggest swings or this and that, because I think that's the easiest way to get fired. I think your job as a GM is to maximize every scenario available to you. And I think even in these scenarios, like, Kyle Lowry still has value, right? And you have to figure out, is his value to us next season as a culture guy, as a leader of the team, as also just a good player, is that worth more than the return you'll get? Which, because you're not going to get much. And the same thing for Serge and DeRozan and JV and everyone else like that. Like, you just have to, you have to manage that still. And I don't know how you do that part, because that's the tough part. I don't think anyone the Raptors trade right now can give them back more value necessarily. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, and I find it kind of funny, is if I asked you if DeMar has more trade value right now,
mm-hmm.
where individually, you know, he's obviously playing as well as he's ever played.
Sure.
But the flaws have been so exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also in this different age of basketball in terms of how the game's played. Or was it, say, you know, in the second or third year of his like 4 year, $40 million deal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find it hard, because at that point, you know, people are still looking at his upside.
Right.
There wasn't a complete shift in the league, so, you know, his mid-range game didn't look as bad. So I honestly didn't have an answer for it.
I think there still should be a robust market for DeRozan.
Right.
I'm looking just
asking, like, which one is more valuable. He will for sure have value to some teams. There will obviously be that one head coach or multiple head coaches that'll say, you know, I will be able to, you know, get DeMar to give more on the defensive end. He's got physical tools. He's got strength. There's a way that we can, you know, scheme for him to be more of a positive factor on that end. So teams will be able to sell them off, because, you know, the high end talent, that's hard to come by. So
he is high end talent, man. This man could, yeah. I think people are forgetting a little bit of, I think this is also the byproduct of the playoffs, like what you're saying, like.
Right.
You know, you lose value by losing like this in the playoffs. You do. The same players are the same players, but the perception is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not as much of a sell to be like, hey, we brought in DeMar. And they're like, oh, DeMar? The regular season guy? Right? Cause like, the thing is like, the crazy thing is like, you'll talk about this on the internet, like wherever you go, like, you know, Reddit, Real GM, Twitter, wherever. And like, you'll get like Grizzlies fans or like Nuggets fans, like teams that are like, you know, not really doing much. And they'll be like, oh, I don't know if I want this regular season. I'm like, all you do is regular season. You don't even make the playoffs. Like, what? Yo, what do you mean? Like, what, you're talking down to us? Really? You? Like, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. Yeah. I think DeMar, I don't think it affects too much in terms of his contract and the upside. I think people will still see upside in the sense of like, this is an opportunity not taken, like with the defensive thing. And maybe if I put him in a team where there's better defense around him, then you can sort of accentuate his skills. And I'm sure teams can talk themselves into that. So I don't know. I think the contract, it's fine. I don't think most people mind that deal. He's also a no-nonsense, like, superstar. Or not superstar, but all-star, who won't get into trouble, is a really good guy, like, great for your organization. Like, you know, there's a lot of factors at play.
No, there's a lot of value in that.
That's why they don't just trade him for Chandler Parsons, man. What the hell? Also, like, yo, you can't just trade him to Memphis. The guy you're like, I am Toronto, this and this and this, and then you're like, yeah, you know what, go to the Grizzlies. Like, word? Really? Like, maybe you could trade him to LA. Like, maybe. It's what, yeah. Like, you'd be like, hey, look, he's from there, his family's sick, like, send him to LA. Like, you're doing him a solid. I'm sure DeMar wouldn't mind going to LA, right? I'm sure he would like to stay here, but like, beyond that, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And, yeah, I mean, I said this before, you do that Chandler Parsons and number four pick trade, like, you're trading for a pick that you're hoping is as good as DeRozan? Or, yeah. Like...
Also, who are you getting with that pick? There's all sorts of centers in this draft. Yeah, everybody in this draft is a center, except for Doncic and, like, some random point guards that are just, like, your annual, like, oh, he's athletic, but he can't shoot.
Right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean...
And I trade him.
I've kind of been working on another piece of just, like, it is just, like, an anti-tanking piece.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think people just get caught up in this hope that, you know, you land a top five pick and now you've got something to build around. But first of all, you have to be so bad to get that top five pick. And yeah. Once you get that pick, if you're bad for a few years, chances are they don't want to stay. Mm-hmm. And so I was just looking back since the draft lottery was introduced in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
There have been 28 drafts. And so you take five picks out of each draft, you're looking at 140 top five picks, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I asked you, what would you say if I asked you to guess how many out of the 140 have won a championship with the team they were drafted by?
Okay, so this is since when?
1990. Yeah.
I don't know.
Six?
Actually? Oh, okay. I was gonna say, like, you can kind of think of them through, like, Steph.
Yeah.
LeBron. I mean, circuitously, but LeBron. Tim Duncan.
Right.
No, sorry.
So Steph's not on the list because he wasn't a top five pick.
That's true. He's talking about top five.
Right.
Wow, only six.
Yeah. So specifically guys who were drafted in the top five mm-hmm. from 1990. So that's 140 players. Only six have done it. And so the list is Tim Duncan.
Right.
Dwayne Wade.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Kyrie Irving.
Okay. Yeah.
Tristan Thompson, LeBron James.
Yo, Tristan Thompson being on that list is so funny, man.
and Jason Kidd.
Oh, and Jason Kidd, okay.
So realistically,
mm-hmm.
LeBron only went back to Cleveland because he's from Cleveland.
Yeah, and Kyrie and Tristan Thompson only won that because of LeBron.
Yep. And then Jason Kidd, like, he was drafted by Dallas, so mm-hmm. he only won it in the tail end of his career when he went back.
That barely counts.
So realistically, Dwayne Wade and Tim Duncan are the only guys who have done it legit.
Yeah. That's insane, man.
That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah. Look at OKC. After all that, they still have nothing.
Yeah, so you literally have less than a 1% chance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I think exactly, right? The more you want to reduce the thinking of, like, how you want a team built, the more you get away from sort of the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the NBA is dictated by these star players dictating outcomes. I don't think anyone, like, disputes that, right? The game of basketball is such that there's, like, I don't know, 100 offensive possessions, 100 defensive possessions, and you can sort of have one player can control a disproportionate amount of that. So even though it's a team sport, one player can control a lot. It's not like baseball where, you know, whoever, Josh Donaldson can only bat once every nine times, right? Like, LeBron can literally take eight of those at-bats. So, like, it's really important to have one guy, and so, like, that's why the nature of basketball is always dominant like this. But, like, you know, you got to think about how you get those stars, but then, you know, yeah, you break down your organization. It doesn't really do much for you because, like, eventually LeBron will leave. Like, look at the Cleveland.
It's so
the first
hard
time.
To get back to the top, man. It's so hard.
You just have to have, like, a perfect confluence of situations where you have the perfect head coach set up and the perfect front office set up, and the perfect player to come in at the same time. And I think that's what you're illustrating with that thing. Like, Duncan. That's the situation that happened there. Dwayne Wade, that's the situation that happened there.
And the Duncan situation also, we have to remember that part of that was David Robinson getting injured.
Yeah, it was a complete fluke. I mean, also, you know, he got injured and then they held him out the whole year basically to tank, but.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that was a case where they already had one elite player.
That's why championship or bust is kind of crazy. Like, yes, of course, the goal is to play for a championship, but, like, and of course, it makes you sound tough and, like, above everyone else when you say you're championship or bust. But, like, realistically, what are you really doing? Yeah. Most teams, you know, like, Most teams don't get to, like, yo, there's not a very high chance the Sixers ever win the championship with this team that they tanked like 15 years for.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly.
Just because some of those years they tanked the whole year and they got Nerlens Noel and, what's his name? Jahlil Okafor and Michael Carter-Williams. Like, so yeah, cool. You got Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid now. We'll see if that goes anywhere, but like, you know.
Yeah.
That's just kind of what it is. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right here. I'm going to come back and take some Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Is your insurance company forcing you to go back to work when your doctors say you can't? If this sounds familiar, look no further than my law firm. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Welcome back to the second half of the podcast. You're here with Vivek. We are taking your Twitter questions. So, first one comes from at Coleman Colmang. It's easy to buy into the Raptors' 59 wins. Truth be told, the bench overachieved early, bailing out the starters more often than not. Good luck making a trade. Oh man, come on. Should the Raptors give us something to hope for by playing this young talent more? What do you think of the first one, first of all? Like, people trying to tear down the 59 wins thing.
It doesn't mean anything?
It's not just a meaning thing, it's just people are like trying to like downplay it because like, yeah, the Raptors, you know, were supernaturally good against shitty teams.
Right.
And they had pretty good health. And I guess some players overperformed. I don't know about that. I don't know about overperformed or overachieved.
Yeah, but I mean, so they finished 35-2 against teams under 500. Mm-hmm. But they also finished 24-21 against teams over 500, which I believe was the third or fourth best record in the league.
Yeah.
Against teams over 500. So,
yeah, it turns out everyone beats shitty teams and everyone loses to good teams.
Yeah.
And so if you're 500 against good teams, that's already pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I think that's just, it is what it is. Like Golden State and Houston are the only ones that legit had like a winning percentage over 60 against plus 500 teams. So,
true. And we beat Houston twice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I don't take anything away from the 59 wins. You know, I've said this before. I treat the regular season and the playoffs as separate entities. Like, you know, in terms of evaluation, anyway. Mm-hmm. So, 59 wins, winning the Eastern Conference after, you know, most projections had the Raptors falling, you know, behind Washington, behind Milwaukee, behind Boston. You know. And obviously the Cavs. So they definitely exceeded the expectations from that standpoint. You look at, what the mindset would have been when the Raptors said that they were changing up their offense. Mm-hmm. I honestly expected a ton of growing pains.
And they didn't really have any, man. Like, short of Kyle Lowry saying like, well, I don't get the ball as much anymore, or like, I don't run pick and roll the same. And it wasn't even a thing. Like, it didn't even become like a story, really. It was just like, yeah that's true. He wasn't touching the ball as much early on, but you know, he caught fire in the second half of the season, so
just in time to catch all those bonuses.
Hey, get your money.
And then that's, you know, you look at the bench as well, you know, with the relative inexperience that they had. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect them to play. I don't think anyone expected them to play as well as they did and become the bench mob. So yeah, all those things matter. That's what you sort of operate off of to go into the off season and make plans, and you know, even into next season and how you go about your business. So,
yeah, that's why I don't really get downplaying. Like, you can just accept that some things were successful. Just because you ultimately failed in your end goal doesn't mean like your whole season was a failure. Like every single part of it was bad. That's not true. Like, it's not true. Like, the bench did play really well and bail out the starters early in the season a lot. But like, that speaks to the bench being really good. Like, why does it have to be a negative?
Yeah, that's like working a job and then being disappointed with anything less than being CEO.
Like, yeah, that's crazy, man. Like, it's seriously, like, it's crazy. And it's like, it's not right to take that success away from the young guys, especially since this year they established themselves as like, hey, we are, a legit unit and like, we're coming up together. And it's great. Like, who doesn't love that? It's kind of weird to hate on that part. I mean, yeah, I think the Raptors could play the young talent more, and I think they will, but like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. And the same question he sort of talks about, like, the bench overachieving, and then later on saying he hopes to play the young talent more. So it's like, which one is it, man? Anyway, next one from Scott. Does the outcome of Cavs-Celtics make you feel better or worse about the KC firing the Raptors in general?
You would have to say better, right? I mean,
yeah.
Because say I mean, if like, the Cavs stayed
how,
hot.
How like, bad did you feel about the KC firing, though? Like,
I honestly thought it was time.
Yeah, time. But some people just move on. Like the Raptors, yeah. Like everyone wants to move on from the Raptors, right? Like this thing, like, we don't want to do this again. So, like,
I was kind of ready for it a season ago.
Yeah, well, how many years in a row was KC in the hot seat, man? Like,
I mean, I didn't feel any particular way about it. Obviously, extremely grateful for him being a part of that whole change in the Raptors organization and becoming a winning team and getting out of, you know, the cellar of the NBA.
Yeah.
But,
bro, he's the DeMar DeRozan of coaches. That's all you got to say about that. There's good and bad that comes with it.
Yeah.
Next one from Vladrick at Space. Okay. With the lack of a pick and our salary constraints being what they are, do you see Masai trading into the draft? And if so, who does he trade and what range of pick do you think that player will get? I don't know. You think they're going to trade into the draft? They got to really like a guy to trade into the draft.
I mean, they got to get a coach before the draft first.
Yeah. And they are taking their time with this coach.
Yeah, so I'd be surprised if they made any moves before hiring a coach, just because ideally you want there to be synergy in terms of who the coach wants, in terms of how the roster is constructed. So I don't know if how that timing will work in terms of getting a coach in and then getting ready for the draft. Mm-hmm. So I'd be surprised if they traded into the draft.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I think they probably have a guy, like, I'm sure, you know, Dan Tolsman's been out there grinding. Trying to find the next Fred VanVleet. I think that's probably the path he'll go. Also, like, we don't even know how many roster spots are going to be available in this year.
Yep.
Yeah. But who knows? Who knows? All right, next one from Tank Nation Raptors. How much blame does Masai deserve? He's still evaluating whether or not DeRozan's the first option on the title team. Okay, look. Second half of the question, I think what he says is not necessarily what is there, right? Especially with someone like DeRozan. Like, yeah, he talks about evaluating, but I think what he really means is just like, you know, like, what's the optimum time? Like, it's like stock, right? Stock is going to move up and down. You want to, like, release the stock at the point where you can get the most, like, highest price for it, right? Mm-hmm. Also, while at the same time not holding on so long that it just becomes nothing. So,
yeah.
That's what Masai is doing. Like, when he says evaluating, he's just kind of like, yo, listen, if there's a good offer, this guy's going. Like, of course. And I'm sure Masai's not sitting there like, wow, man, why didn't DeRozan average 40 a game for us like LeBron's doing? Like, no, of course not, right? Like, I think he knows.
Yeah.
But in terms of how much blame he gets, I mean, have you been seeing this, like, weird little backlash to the Masai? And
yeah, I have seen some of it, and it is puzzling. Like, I think
it's not like he shouldn't have any blame, because, like, Serge and DeMar were not good. Right.
And say, you know, that there are some things that you can look back on that look like mistakes now. Mm-hmm. But you also have to acknowledge all the good he's done ever since he's taken over from Brian Colangelo. So, and, you know, I think when you look at the whole resume of what he's accomplished in his time here, the good far outweighs the bad.
Yeah, exactly. Next one from Mark. Does any of this even matter? See, this is the stuff I'm talking about. Like, this Raptors grief. Like, does any of this stuff even matter? Is probably depression. Okay. So he's almost there. Like, that's for the fourth step, you know?
You know what's more depressing?
What?
Having to watch a 20-win team in December and Jan and Feb in Canada.
Yeah. And then your favorite bloggers get no money whatsoever, period.
You're already stuck at home anyway. And yeah, now exactly. They're talking to watch with this 20-win team, so.
Yeah. Oh, even more depressing now is that even Woodley is tweeting negative things about the Raptors. It's wild. it's a wild ride to see Sean Woodley's heel turn. It's not even a heel turn. It's just like, he's like, I can't even pretend anymore.
Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah.
We all need a break, man. We're all getting breaks soon.
Yep.
You got your trip coming up. I've got mine. I'm sure Sean will have his. So we'll all come back fresh, man, ready for another season.
Jeez. Yo, he said if you drop Kyle or DeMar into the series, they'd be the seventh best player on the floor. The Raptors were never winning shit. And then he says, and that was and that's fine, but like.
That's the Houston Golden State series, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I was like, man, if you said that about the Boston Cavs series.
Yo, come on, man. Also, like, come on, Lowry would bake it into the top five for the Rocket side.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, what?
Yeah.
Really? Like.
No, but he meant top seven in the series, right?
Oh, like, so also, okay, yeah. Well, I mean, right. It's tough. You got one team with seven, like, it's like a matter of would you play Kyle Lowry over PJ Tucker?
Right.
And the answer is probably yes. Like, what do you mean? Yeah. Obviously, like, they play different positions, so you gotta, like, factor that into play, but come on, man. Come on.
Unless he got funky. Like, D'Antoni's the type of guy, he'd probably start Chris Paul and Lowry in the backcourt and Harden at the three.
Jeez. Yeah, he's really changed all of his philosophies as a coach, and that's really cool. It takes a lot to grow in your 50s and 60s.
It would be cool if Dwayne Casey sort of had that moment too, right?
He did. He just didn't have like the moment in the playoffs. He just did it in the regular season. That's why we right. feel so bad yeah. about firing him this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Man.
What we got?
This one for Retro Yeezy. Why is DeRozan a coward when he faces LeBron but throws basketballs at refs in the Drew League? That's just. That's not even a question. That's just a statement.
Yeah.
That's just like, yeah, you gotta just drop the mic or something, man. Like, that's it. That's true. That is true.
That's true. Move on.
Where's that same energy? It's not there. Man. Okay, there's some DeRozan trade stuff. Something about DeRozan's defense. All right, you know what? Forget. Let's just go with this last one. From Hans Wolfstein. Of the three teams, who are you rooting for?
Of the three teams,
like left, so I'm like the Warriors, Rockets.
I'm rooting for a Cavs Rockets final.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? You don't want to see Golden State in the finals?
I think it's a more competitive final. I actually think LeBron would have a shot.
Yes, for sure. And I'm cheering for LeBron.
Like, yeah. I'll be cheering for LeBron too. Like. So the one thing, you know, that maybe frustrated me a little bit watching last year's finals mm-hmm. was seeing LeBron like at full tilt and it just not mattering. Like he was,
kind of funny to be honest.
Like he was doing everything he possibly could just to like avoid a sweep.
Yeah. And they literally broke an NBA record by hitting 24 threes in the one game they won.
Yeah.
Dude, LeBron scored 41. On 19 of 30 shooting, had 13 rebounds and 8 assists in that elimination game, and they still got eliminated.
Yep. So
41, yeah. 13, and 8, man. God.
Yeah. Damn. And I mean,
and like good defense too. Well, like good-ish. I mean, KD kind of cooked them a little bit, but
yeah, it is what it is. So that's the thing. If Houston wins and CP's out for a few games, LeBron's got to be looking at that and saying, "I got a shot."
Yep.
I got more than a shot.
Mhm.
So yeah, I'll definitely be rooting for the Rockets to win game 7 and then yeah, bring it on.
Yep. All right.
Well, what about you?
You know what it is? I find myself always partial to institutions in sports. So like I don't actually want to see a new challenger. I kind of want to see existing teams sort of continue their legacies. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really root against the Yankees, or like, I don't root against like, you know, in soccer. Like, I don't really root against United even. I don't really, you know. Yeah. And it's the same thing in basketball. Like, I kind of want to see these teams kind of persist. So like, yeah, I want to see Warriors and I want to see Cavs. And I would be rooting for the Cavs. I just think that the Warriors would beat the Cavs. Although it's a little bit closer than people would think, man. The Warriors are not the same. They're kind of weaker this year.
No, but this Cavs team is just bad, dog.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
If it was a Cavs team from last year, then I'd say sure.
Yeah. That's but, well, man. If they had Kyrie.
Oh, man. So.
Damn. All right.
Yeah.
That's the podcast. Raptors fans, man. Find a way to feel better. That's it. Find a way to, like, we will get catharsis eventually, but you have to go through the five stages of grief. And wherever you are right now, you'll get through it, buddy. You'll get through it. You'll be back. You'll be back. And the people that are listening to this podcast right now, thank you so much for still supporting Raptors content, because it is tough out here. It is tough out here.
Thank you.
yeah. All right. We'll catch you next week. Thanks again to Vivek for coming on the show. What do you want to plug? What you got going on?
I'm going to do a player review on Jakob Poeltl. I'll be up on Raptors Republic on the 30th. I might do...
Yo,
I might
just leave out the playoff portion, all right?
So...
Just talk about how good player Jakob Poeltl was in the regular season.
Yeah. It's all... Like, I'm not even going to, like... I'm just going to pretend it didn't happen.
I mean, he basically didn't even play in the playoffs. And whatever he did, he was fouling, like, six times a game.
Yeah, did not see that coming.
I had a good moment in the Wizards series. Like, kind of. Like, he was generally pretty shitty in the Wizards series, but, like...
That was, like, the worst compliment ever.
He did, though.
Nice moment.
Yo,
he like, kind of, didn't have, a good half, a good game. Like, a nice moment.
I think he might have blocked John Wall, like, once. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Who cares about John Wall? Yeah, we'll be back next week. Peace out. Thanks again, Vivek. Follow him on Twitter at Vivek M. Jacob. Where are you at right now? I know you got to 905 recently. 962. Get my man to 1,000, please. Please. He's not going to follow you back. It's okay. He doesn't need to read your tweets, but you got to read his tweets, all right? Especially with tennis season coming up now, French Open season.
World Cup. I have World Cup stuff coming.
Yeah, so. That's right. The most versatile man in the game.
Yeah. Especially if you love cricket.
Especially if you love cricket. Especially if you love cricket. Lives up to all the stereotypes. All right, man. Peace out, man.
Later.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
Hi, Jan. I heard Toyota-thon is on.
It sure is.
Perfect. I'm getting a head start on my list for Santa.
Well, we've got great year-end deals on Camry, Highlander, RAV4, and more.
But what kind of toys do you have?
It's actually Toyota-thon, not Toyota-thon. We have great deals on vehicles, not toys. I'm sorry, sweetie.
Okay, what can I get for $5?
Current offers end November 30th. Toyota-thon ends January 4th. Participating dealers only. Toyota. Let's go places.